Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 51, June 5th, 2012. Amanda returns. Good evening, everybody. From Pleasant Hope, Missouri, it's Bob Heil, and this is Ham Nation, a show about what else? Ham radio. We're so glad to be here tonight, and we have all of our co-hosts here tonight. Gordon West is here from Costa Mesa. How are you, Gordo? Everything okay down there?
Everything is terrific. In fact, Julian and Hannah, who just got married, are tuned in all the way in Hawaii. So we're literally coast to coast, Bob.
All right. Yay. You got that. And from Mississippi, we got the old smoke and solder. I know there's a little smoke coming up from the south. How you doing, George? You okay down there?
Hi, Bob. Hi, Gordo and Amanda. Yeah, doing good down here. We had a little thunderstorm last night, and I slept right through it. So that time of year here.
All right. And back from a move is Amanda from Colorado. You made the move. You and Jeff got everything where it's supposed to go and working, huh?
Well, I wouldn't go that far yet, but yes, we did get moved in the new ham shack. I'm really happy about that, and I don't recommend moving to anybody. Don't do it. Don't do it unless you have to.
Well, it's good to have you back, and have you been able to get on the air at all during this move, or have you had everything down in boxes?
Well, we did get a really very temporary dipole up. So I was able to still run my net on my days that I run it. And other than that, we're still working on getting all of our UHF stuff, 2 meter, 6 meter, 70 centimeter stuff up. So Jeff's real eager to get up there in the trees, trim some of those limbs, and go from there. And we're working on some knob and tube, you guys. Nightmare power. So it's been kind of hard for us.
Well, you'll make it. As you can see, I am not in my usual place. And the reason is that the room that we have built here at the second home in the Springfield, Missouri area is totally cleaned out. I had to move everything out. And they are putting tile down. I didn't want carpet in that room. So we had to take it all out yesterday, and they're putting the tile down. And so I'm in the kitchen. And I was lucky. I had enough Ethernet to run all the way out here. And so here we are. But we'll show you some more of that later and see what we can do to make things a little better. George, before we go too far, do you have a report on Tom, OHQA Radio? What's the latest on our friend Tom?
Well, I talked to Tom yesterday on Skype, and he's already got the cast off his arm. They said it was healing good, and he's still wearing a sling, but the arm's coming along. He's still got the neck brace. I think he's going to have it on for 9 weeks total, but he looked good and seemed to be back pretty much full force, except he can't get upstairs to his ham shack just yet.
Well, I know you and I had a little conversation with him on Google Plus here not too long ago, and I was amazed. It was only about a week after, and for everybody that didn't know, he had a wreck leaving Dayton. He was pulling out of downtown and got sideways with another car, and it was really sad. But what was it, George? He broke his neck and his arm in two places. Is that right? Am I right on that?
Yeah, I believe he broke his left arm in two places, and he fractured his C3 vertebrae, but seems to be recovering good. He was more concerned about what happened to all his gear and his video than himself, and I think he recovered everything except one bag, and FedEx lost it somewhere along the way, so it could show up yet.
Oh, boy. Well, we really wish him the best, and we've all been praying for him and hoping things get much better quicker. And it looks like he's on the speedy recovery, so we'll have him on when he can get to his station. And he called me yesterday and told me that he couldn't get up to his equipment upstairs, so we'll have him on the program when he gets back in and going. That'll be great. And, Gordon, what's the latest on the newlyweds? What kind of information we got coming from Hawaii from these guys?
Well, we'll probably hear about them from the chat room, but the wedding went just great, and video probably next week, and we played radio over there. But, Bob, I've got some numbers, some very encouraging numbers that I think all of our listeners and viewers may want to know about. 87,000. That's how many feet the Dayton balloon went up before it burst and gave ATV all the way on the way down. Came down only about 8 miles away. Dayton had a record crowd of 24,000. Record, not breaking all records, but record lately. And 500 volunteers made Dayton happen. Non-paid, all volunteers. So isn't that great for Dayton, Ohio?
That's wonderful. It's really cool. And I know that balloon was launched, and they had really good weather to do that. Many times you try these things and, uh-oh, it's too windy or too cold or this or that, or it's raining. It was perfect this year. So that's great. And the other thing that's interesting is there were 500 volunteers to take to put Dayton Hamvention on. We really, really wave our flag to all of the members of the DARA organization and the volunteers from all around the area. So that's great because they make all the fun for us. And next year we're carving out a spot for Amanda and Jeff. Did you know that, Gordon, that we've already got a spot carved out for them next year? Did I tell you that?
Wow. Well, that's terrific. And they really did Ham Nation a big service by letting us in at the last minute and showing us and giving us the capabilities to get a signal out of there so everybody could see all the fun we were having at Dayton buying stuff.
Got that right. Got that right. And the Viasat was so gracious in getting their engineers out there and providing us the uplink. That was terrific. So we'll see what we can do even better next year. So we'll be listening for all your ideas of what we should be doing. And we'll make it all happen. Gordon, you have some video, I think, that you brought back from you guys having fun on the beach down there. Did that all turn out good for you?
It did. In fact, we're going to actually show some still shots, and maybe next week we'll give you the video. But before we go on with the still shots, we had a lot of folks ask us once we got over there, Mike, WA7YET and W7TWA, an airline pilot, said, how'd you get that battery and antennas onto the aircraft? Is that like TSA approved? Well, I'm very happy to say that the battery meets TSA requirements. It is a nickel-cadmium battery, and as long as you put it with your carry-on, not the stowed baggage, but the one you carry aboard, and as long as you've got it well protected from shorting out, it's good to go. And they don't have any maximum capacity. I don't think you'd want to bring an automobile battery, but we had a 10.5 amp hour battery, and that battery came from a company called DaySaver.com, DaySaver.com, 10.5 amp hours. In just a moment, you'll see it, because what we wanted to do, Bob, was to get on the air and make some contacts out of our rental car as well as down at the beach. And look at this. Our first QSL already came in from a, it looks like a Hawaiian ham, WB6OVH. You can see he's got all the pineapples and stuff on it. But we're getting more and more QSLs. So, Big John, if you're ready, let's do a 10-second per shot. And we'll tell you about some of the gear that allowed us to get on the air from Maui, Hawaii all last week. All right, John's going to bring up the video, I think, in just a moment. And as he's getting that up, that's what it looked like when we put all of our stuff in a roller on, and we could carry that on board, Outbacker antenna and the ICOM 706, as well as some other ham source equipment to monitor our voltage. And then our next shot is the battery. Now, that battery is 10.5 ampere hours. It's got Anderson connections. It's got a cigarette lighter plug for plugging into the automobile. That way, we run off the battery and only pull a little bit of juice out of the car itself. And again, that's from DaySaver. That's what the end of the battery looks like. And by the way, they've got a voltage protection circuit. So if we draw too much current, something heats up and it pops out. But the battery performed great. Now, the antenna mount was a Diamond K400, and we do not use the little sleeves that protect it from gouging into the rental car's metal. You want to ground that. So with our little Allen wrench, a little bit rusty, we grounded the heck out of that antenna on the trunk lid. And as soon as we closed the trunk, bingo, there it is. And that was about a two-minute job to get that on board. Got to watch that little tab off to the bottom left that it doesn't gouge into the paint job of the rental car, because remember, it's just a rental. And there's the Outbacker. That came from Don W6GPS years ago. He brought Outbacker over here. That's the three-piece that fits just inside Susie's luggage bag. And we screw all three pieces together, and here's what we have. Gazingo, 160 meters. No, I'm wrong, 75 meters. It's through 10 meters, and it just screws right on the car, and we were on the air with minimum SWR, full power, and we did both 40 meters back to the mainland, west coast, as well as 20 meters, and we tried to work many of you on 20 meters, both down at the seashore as well as in the rental vehicle. Now, the only thing we had a problem was the little wrench here. The vice grips were a little too long. They say 7 inches for tools to get on board the aircraft. Well, we screwed on the little doodad at the right-hand side, and we just made it, and the guy was a ham. He goes, oh, I'm blah, blah, blah. And I go, well, that's great. So he let me on board. For the car, Anderson connections, because you never want to plug in a live cigarette lighter because you could actually short it out. So we have Andersons, and that plugged into the automobile's accessory socket. That went to the battery, and you'll see the battery on the right-hand side. There's the ICOM 706, and it worked just great. And HamSource has not only a brand new voltage monitor and current device, but they also have a little splitter that ensures that we don't backfeed the car with the 12 volts. Here you see we're just munching right along at 12.28 volts. The car worked just great. We didn't short anything out. And we were on the air from Maui, Hawaii. And the little vice grips hooked into the power source, plus this battery, worked great down at the seashore, where we were able to get a signal all the way back to K5LN and several others here at the West Coast, all the way from Maui, Hawaii. And if you need it, this is a handy device from MFJ. It's a impedance transformer that down at the seashore, our impedance was about 20 ohms. We needed 50, so click, 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 and it pops in shunt inductance or capacitance. I don't know which one this is, but whatever it is, it gave us a perfect VSWR or 100 watts out. And that's the story. And I know some of you have asked the question, why did we not remote the ICOM 706 with the cable? Well, here's something that you'll learn shortly if you've not tried that in a rental car. Unless the radio is well grounded, and this has a lot of chokes on it, the cable between any high-frequency radio, the Yaesu or the ICOM, to the body of the radio, RF will get into the cable, and you say, hello, and the radio shuts off. And you think, oh, my gosh, what did I blow up? So we're very cautious always to run this right on the radio and not use the 20-foot remote cable, because that remote cable is going to pick up the RF coming off that trunk lid antenna and put you off the air. So we were on the air, Bob, and hopefully we had a pretty good signal. I think you heard us all the way. And again, seawater as our ground plane. We'll have more video next week with Julian and Hannah showing you how we did right down there at the seashore. So hope everybody enjoyed that. Remember, Field Day is coming up. And from radio waves, they have the off-center fed Windom antenna. They've recently made some changes to the antenna construction. And boy, this one is really built to take it. And we'll be talking more in the next couple of weeks about getting set for Field Day. And we hope that our net controllers that have done such a good job on 7263 and 7268 and 14268 will tune us in on that weekend as well. And we'll have Ham Nation on the air Field Day all over the country. So, Bob, that's the mini cruise to Maui, Hawaii. We're back, and it was good to see everybody when we were out there in Maui, because the pilot discovered us just walking along by the seashore. He says, "Hey, I watch you guys on Ham Nation." That was W7TWA Captain Daniel Hoffman. And Maui, WA7YET, Maui Mike, says, "Thanks for telling me about how to get a battery on an aircraft." So there you go, Bob. That's the Field Day report from Matt.
That was wonderful. Very well done, as usual, from you guys. And I guess we're going to postpone talking about the wedding until next week, when the newlyweds can relay the story in real time. We had a beautiful picture from them. So we know that it all took place. And yeah, I heard you guys back here in Southwest Missouri. It was really great. And the band was really full, so I didn't just jump in and make a bunch of noise, because there were so many wanting to work in. That's great. But we appreciate everybody. Mike was there, WT6H, running his net, and Bill, K5LN. You guys do such a great job. And then now Amanda's back, so get ready, Amanda. You know what's coming next. You're going to have all kinds of Field Day. So let's see what you've been doing, collecting some tales about hams, and see what's going on. Amanda, you're back with us, and we're glad you're here, and we missed you. So what kind of tales do you have this week for us here on Ham Nation?
Well, Bob, this one is dedicated to you, of course, but Jeff wanted to scroll around our ham shack real quick, you guys, so you y'all could see our new ham shack here. And of course, you can see our call signs here, and up above my head you can see a little bit of a microphone, maybe, but Jeff's going to pan around here so you can see our new shack. We're really proud of it, because we used to share a shack with our bedrooms. So, okay, here we go. There's a new workbench here. And we've got a service monitor, I believe, and signal generator. And then there's the radios, the amplifier, the antenna tuner. And he's walking behind me, you guys. This is a little bit tight. And then, of course, he'll show behind me and our little wall mural that's dedicated to us, of course. I don't know who else we would dedicate it to. But look at that microphone. Isn't that nice? And an on the air. And, of course, our call signs and our Worked All States awards. So we're real proud of it. We're real happy to be here. So, all right. To the tales, you guys. Sorry about that. We just had to show it off a little bit. Just a little bit. All right, this one comes from Benny Gelzer, and he's in, I believe, Sweden. His call sign is HB9FEF, and the only reason he got his license is because of Bob Heil himself. So here it goes. I was listening to your interview with Leo before you started Ham Nation. What you said about ham radio being key for your career and life struck me. I was interested in technology since I was a boy, but amateur radio always seemed too technical and nerdy to me. I think a lot of us get that feeling sometimes, so it's not a problem there, Benny. Anyhow, of course, I had radios, and I was experimenting and soldering and building my own devices of all kinds, but I never thought of taking the exam. Because of that very interview with you and Leo, I decided 30 years after my childhood experiments to finally take the exam and become a licensed ham. Well, congratulations there, Benny. He enrolled for the Swiss HB9/CEPT exam, which I have not looked this up yet, but I definitely plan on looking that up to see what all that test involves and see if it's comparable to ours. But he says that exam, he believes, is equivalent to the extra class here. So, and ever since, he's been enjoying the great hobby there. So It's all because of Bob and Leo having a conversation about ham radio and how important it is to all of us here in the United States. And I congratulate Benny, and I really, really hope to get to work him sometime on HF there.
Great story. Yeah, Benny's talking about that program that we did, oh gosh, over a year ago in March. On it was triangulation number 8. If none of you have witnessed that and saw that and looked at it, you might want to go back in the archives of Leo's shows and look for triangulation. It was the 8th show. It was really good. We have so much fun. And that's where Ham Nation was born. Got the idea there. Leo says, wow, my chat room, mostly all hams, and that's how we all got here. Speaking of the chat room, by the way, before I get too far, chat room, of course, is open, and Cheryl's in there watching it. And a lot of guys, they have trouble getting to the chat room, and it's very simple. Maybe Chad might want to throw something up on the bottom 30 in a little bit. It's just irc.twit.tv, irc.twit.tv. Takes you to the chat room, and we'll be back at the about the end of the show, and Cheryl comes up with some questions that you guys and gals will be asking there. Well, Amanda, thanks very much. We'll look forward to seeing you on the nets afterwards, and Jeff did a great job helping you get that all going, and we look forward to seeing you a lot here. So you guys and gals have fun up Denver area. That's great. Okay. I want to go back and say hi to Don. We're going to have to do this by video tonight. Don Wilbanks has done a Newsline video. And there again, this is Newsline. Bill Pasternak has produced these things for decades, and they're really great. I hope you're getting to hear the full Newsline on your repeaters or your shortwave stations, or you can dial them in on the internet. So let's go hear a word from Don and see what the news of the week was on Newsline.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1816, here are the Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, June 6, 2012. It's been called the region's worst earthquake since the 1300s. Striking on Sunday, May 20th at 4:04 a.m. local time, the quake's epicenter was located about 35 kilometers north of the Italian city of Bologna in a relatively shallow depth of 5 kilometers. Its intensity measured 6.0 on the Richter scale as it shook the nation's densely populated northeast region. Homes, factories, and some historic church steeples were all felled by the force of the trembler. There was a 5.8 magnitude aftershock Tuesday, May 29th at 9 a.m. local time in the province of Modena, about 22 miles northwest of Bologna. This aftershock caused more buildings to collapse across the region, leaving at least 17 people dead, more than 350 injured, and 12 people reported missing. Italian radio amateurs are responding in the wake of the disaster. The voluntary group RNRE was requested to make several mobile units available to respond as needed due to the continuing seismic activity. No HF frequencies were in use during the initial quake, with all communications apparently taking place on the VHF and UHF bands. IARU Region 1 now reports that 7060 kHz is in use by the RNRE and the Rome Civil Protection Department. There are also VHF links in the area. Following a request from the Italian Civil Protection Department, the RNRE has sent one mobile unit with 5 radio amateurs to the affected area, and 2 more units are ready to go if requested. Another 4.3 magnitude earthquake was registered May 28th in southern Italy. At airtime, there is no information about any injuries or damages caused by the latest earthquake. Ohio hams now have antenna and support structure assurance. On May 15th, Ohio Governor John Kasich signed a bill granting comprehensive protections and rights to amateur radio operators in that state. HB 158 codifies the federal restrictions on the local zoning of amateur station antenna structures, thereby preserving amateur radio service communications as a homeland security resource. It also places the burden of proof for compliance on the zoning authority. The language of the new Ohio law removes the burden of proof from the amateur radio operator and places it on the legislative authority, and that is very good news for hams living in the Buckeye State. 21 Things to Do After You Get Your Amateur Radio License is a new book by Daniel M. Romanchik, KB6NU, that's now available for electronic reading on the Kindle and Nook. written for the new ham or those amateurs who have not really been all that active of late. Its 21 chapters covers just about every aspect of the hobby as it is today. Included are such topics as how to locate an Elmer, how to buy a radio, set up a shack, and a lot more. Also covered the social aspects of the hobby, including participation in clubs, hamfests, and the like. The Kindle edition is priced under $3 and available from Amazon.com. A big treat for a United Kingdom ham as William Williams, GW8TGS, had the honor of being the Olympic torchbearer as part of the team carrying the flame through the city of Aberystwyth. You can follow the Olympic torch via ham radio and APRS. Just go to aprs.fi and in the box on the right side that says track call sign, type in torch2012, all one word. There's a lot more on this year's Dayton Hamvention that we didn't have time to cover here, including a huge announcement by ICOM and the Boy Scouts of America. It's all in the full audio edition of the Amateur Radio Newsline, available right now on a repeater near you and 24/7 on our website. And that's all from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for nearly 35 years here at www.arnewsline.org and here on Ham Nation. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 73, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
What a great retreat. And it looks like he's out in the bayous. Where do you think he that Jeep? It looked like he was having a good time no matter what, right?
It really did. It looked like he needed a little drink there with a canopy on it, and he's all kicked back. By the way, that ICOM announcement in Boy Scouts of America really has created some strong interest in getting scouts through their merit badge and into technician class. And for any of our viewers and listeners, free, absolutely free. Send me an email and I'll send you our instructor guide, because I've taken the time to come up with the radio merit badge related to the technician class license. So if you're a scout instructor for radio merit badge, you can use this from the W5YI group that corresponds with my book and teach both at the same time. In fact, they'll be doing that this weekend at the Plano Amateur Radio, a convention in Plano, Texas, HamCom, and we understand up in Seaside this past weekend, the report was it was a great convention. So conventions are up, scouts are up, and more good news for scouts as well as kids. The American Radio Relay League just announced ARRL scholarships. And Devin Day, who you saw on this show a few months ago, one of her kids, Jimmy Draper, KJ6ELZ, scored $1,000 from ARRL for the scholarship. So great news for scouts and for kids. And again, this is free of charge. Just send me a note and I'll be happy to send it out to you instantly. And it cross-references the radio merit badge to the technician class amateur radio study guide. All right, Bob, back to you. And Don, thanks for representing scouting with that logo on your license plate.
Oh, that's so great. And Boy Scouts are doing wonderful things, K2BSA, and we'll be covering more of that when they hold their big festival and so on this summer. It's always a great thing. Yeah, any of you guys in the Dallas area, they'll have quite a fest there this weekend. I'm sorry that I can't be there. And Huntsville's coming up and all kinds of great local fests, so that's good. But you really want to start thinking about Field Day. Field Day is going to be here before you know it at the end of the month. So you want to start making antennas and getting your rigs and your batteries and all this together, because Field Day is such a great, great time. I've been kind of in and out showing you guys and gals some of the things that's going on at this new location. It's a second home for Sarah and I, but it's a home that I can start almost fresh in for my radio room. The room is coming along, but we've got all the antennas up for all the wires. Haven't got into the Yagis and the VHF, but we ended up with quite a little menagerie. There's 13 coaxes and control wires out of the room. And they go out in the meadow. Some of them are 500 feet long. It's feeding the last of the phased array. And we're going to show you a lot more of this later each week as we go. But I got a little clip that's going to show you what I came up with. As crazy as it might seem, what really makes a great way to get coax one, or in this case, 13 to 14 of them, through your floor and out through the foundation and all that. So if you guys can roll this video, I'll narrate it. It's probably recognize that background in the last few weeks, but there it is. That is a toilet flange, but I turned it upside down. And then the U fits right on it. And all of this I bought from Lowe's or Home Depot, has them, no big problem. But it's mounted upside down, screwed into the floor. Of course, we drilled a hole and all those coaxes go down through it. There's another one of those in the outside of the wall. And that's a coax switch for six of them. I love the B&W switches. Those are old switches. I've had them for years, but I like them because they come straight out the back. And that's all the different frequencies there of some of the long wires. And then we use the remote switch down 500 feet away from MFJ, and we'll be covering some of that later. I showed some of it last week. But the coaxes go down through there and then out to the meadow. And I have another one that'll do the VHF. I've only got a 6 meter dipole up right now, so I had something. And again, the same thing. It's one of those toilet flanges turned upside down, and then of course the U fits right on it. There's normally a wax seal there on the other side, but no, we don't have any wax seal, and it just really. Great. So there's a simple, inexpensive way and a very classy way to get coax in and out of your house. And Sarah thought it was really good, Gordo, because usually it's just a big hole in the floor. And she thought that was really cool. It looked good.
Oh, that's great, Bob. Always thinking, using plumbing at its very best. Well, congratulations, Sam. You're going to have a monster signal with that size coax.
Well, it works. And here's some coax stuff. And before we get to Georgia, this is RG8. You guys might want to comment on some of this. This is just a little, the Mini 8, RG58, some of it's called. And it's small, as you can see, but doesn't handle a lot of power. And it's not real good for high frequencies, but it's great for just mid-level things, and especially good field day stuff where you can throw it around. It's flexible and all that. But the real stalwart is, of course, the RG213. This is 8214 of Belden. And you'll notice it has a very nice copper braid. You have to be careful when you buy coax. You want to strip it back. It's braided. And what I mean by that is you can pick it apart and you don't end up with a couple of little strands. You can have a big, nice copper shield that you can solder inside that connector. And this has the inner connector that is, of course, stranded. And then we come to the big dog. This is LMR 400. And this is a wonderful piece of coax for VHF. Very low loss. It has a silver braid. But then it has a silver aluminum foil wrap around the inners. So you have double shielding for that VHF and low loss. And, of course, then the inner is much larger than a 213. So I just want to turn you on to that. Do a little investigation with the coax that you buy, because usually you put it up and it's going to be there for a long time. And some of it is variable and some of it is not. So in my case, I had to make made sure that I could bury all this out the runs. It's as I said, there's actually 14 runs out there. I got a spare out there too. So we'll show you some of that later. I got a picture of it the other day. All these coaxes laid. But George, you have any thoughts on that coax that you can add? I know you use a lot of coax there too. And you might want to talk about that, and then let's see what's going on with smoke and solder. And it's really good to have you again this week.
Bob, it's good to be here. And I noticed some guys in the chat room saying LMR 400, and that's excellent coax, a lot lower loss, probably overkill on HF at those lower frequencies. You really don't need that good a cable, but won't hurt anything, and it's certainly better for VHF and UHF. I use RG213 around here for almost everything. I do have some of that Mini 8 run out to one antenna, and, you know, it's been fine, but 213 is my preferred coax. And, Bob, you might want to tell the viewers, what are you going to stick down in those holes on those elbows to keep mice or mosquitoes or anything coming through with the coax?
Well, when we get that all going and that I got the cabinets ready to go, we'll go on top of this new tile floor this weekend. And what I plan to do, you might tell me what you think about this. I'm going to use some steel wool and fill that whole area. You do have to fill it. I don't want to use any kind of caulk or anything because I might have to pull things out. So I usually use some steel wool. You like that idea or you have something better?
No, that's exactly what I was thinking, Bob. Steel wool works good, and mice don't really like it that much. And, you know, it'll still let a little air through, but not much. Main thing is to keep the critters out, and I think steel wool works good.
We have something better here. George, we do. Sousa, where's the cat? Yeah, we got cats.
How do you stuff the cat in there, Gordo?
They figure out a way. If there's something inside, they'll get it.
Well, that's great. You know, last week, as soon as the show was over, I had to get in the mobile and head south to New Orleans for a trade show down there. So I didn't get to talk to you, Gordo, and Julian over in Hawaii. I was running an Outbacker, and I thought my chances might be good from the mobile, but no luck there. Anyway, this week I thought we would do a replay of something I did back in 2007 that it talks a little bit about surface mount soldering, and I know a lot of people are scared of surface mount, but here's a real neat way to do it. It's inexpensive and gives pretty good results. So, John, if you've got the video ready to roll there, let's take a look.
Today we're going to do two things that I've never done before. We're going to build a radio, and we're going to do some surface mount soldering. Now, I've built a radio before. I built several crystal radios with mixed success on those. And I built a transistor radio before. But today, we're going to build a software-defined radio. It's called the SoftRock. The SoftRock is a small, low-cost, good-performing software-defined radio. It takes 12 volts, and it delivers IQ audio signals to a computer sound card where software decodes the audio into something that we can understand. It was designed by Tony Parks, KB9YIG, and Bill Tracy, KD5TFD. I had to go on the internet and do a little research and find all the documentation that I would need to start with so I'd know what I was building and how to put it together. So I did that, and it's scattered about is the best way to put it. I would just say go do a Google search for SoftRock if you want to know more about this particular receiver project. It was initially sponsored by the American QRP Association, I believe. Now, I don't think they are associated with it. However, they do still recommend the project. It's available today, I believe, from the developers, but that could change, you know, by the time you watch this episode. I really don't know. So just some good Google searches should get you the results that you need. Now, there's been several different versions of this radio already. The kit we're building today is version 6 of the SoftRock. I've never done any surface mount soldering before, and I don't own any components to do it with. So I started out by doing a little internet search, finding out how other people were doing it at home. There's looked like three different methods to me that might work that others had used. One involved using a regular soldering iron with a fine tip on it and just soldering with that. And I have a tip small enough that would probably work for some of the larger surface mount stuff. Another method involved using a small convection oven or a toaster oven that's temperature controlled and putting the board in there and baking it. And then a third method, this is one I found on Cash Olson's website. This involved using a beverage mug warmer to heat up the board and just to keep it at a good consistent temperature, and then using a hot air embossing gun to actually melt the solder and reflow it. Now, I don't know how this is going to go. I've never done it before. There are some examples on the internet the example showed some problems. So I hope we don't run into any of those. Maybe we can learn a little bit from others' mistakes as we go. Maybe we'll create a few of our own, and someone else will learn from them too. We begin by populating the side that's got the most components on it. We'll use the mug warmer and the hot air embossing gun to do this side. And once we've got that done, we'll flip it over and we'll put on the remaining surface mount chip and capacitor with the regular soldering iron. And then we'll put in the other through-hole components. So to begin soldering, we're going to need the right solder for the job. This is a tube of solder paste that was obtained from the Cash Olson website. This stuff is quite expensive if you buy it in the quantities that Kester sells it. Fortunately, Cash Olson will sell you a little tube of this very inexpensively, and there's enough in here to do the project, so we should be set to go with that. Now, this solder paste should be stored in a refrigerator, and that's where this has been stored for the last several months, so I hope that it's still good. But we'll begin by taking it and applying a little bit of the solder paste to each of the spots here on the PC board where we want to make a connection now. And we need to be careful that we put the same amount on both sides of the component. Otherwise, it might pull the component to one side or the other when we heat it up. This is a tiny needle, and it's a little bit hard to get this stuff out. Before I go any further, I wanted to show you where I have put the solder paste on the board here. You can see I've already mounted one component right there. It's just stuck in the paste. These other little pads here for the capacitors. And I've laid down little solder ropes. We'll plug in the mug warmer now, though. It takes 15 to 20 minutes to reach full temperature on it. We take the chips and we position them right in the solder paste where they're going to be, and try to center them up as best we can on there. We now have all the components situated on the board, and I'm going to go off camera and fine-tune them with the big magnifying glass to make sure everything's perfectly centered. We're going to let it just sit on here for a little while. 2 or 3 minutes. I do believe that I see the edges may be kind of starting to round off slightly. Okay, the solder is starting to melt. I hope you can see it with the camera. It's already happening, so it's too late for me to move. You know, this is going amazingly well. I believe all the solder has melted at this point. And they say here to leave it on the warmer for a little bit longer. There we go. And it doesn't look bad. None of the components jumped out of place. I think we may have had success here on the first attempt. We're going to put these two on with a conventional soldering iron and a really small tip. Well, it's been a couple hours since we last spoke, and I have now completed mounting all the through-hole components on the board here and soldering them. So all that's ready to go, and what remains now is to mount the crystal, which is no big deal. And we've also got to wind a couple of little inductors and a transformer to go on here. Winding these coils is a little bit of a challenge. Not too bad. They all do need to be kind of uniform when you get through. I've finished the two inductors. Still whining on the transformer. It's an interesting conversation behind me. There's a couple of older hams on there talking about building radios, and probably nobody would build one today. Finally, the last connection. This SoftRock version 6 project has been a lot of fun assembling. Here's what the boards look like. So you can see the rear contains the 3 surface mount integrated circuits and 10 surface mount capacitors. And the front contains all the other components. I've had a lot of fun building this SoftRock version 6 kit, and I hope you've enjoyed watching it. And maybe you learned a little something, who knows. You know, I was kind of disappointed that you really couldn't see it any better than you could when I was actually doing it on the video. But I couldn't move once I started. You know, I had to follow through. So I had an old hard drive here with some service mock components on it, and I took one of the chips off and put it back on so that our viewers could see what it was like. I applied a couple of little lines of the solder paste there, but, you know, it looks like maybe that's a little much, but we'll try it anyway. As the solder begins to meet melting temperature, you'll notice it start to become shiny, and then eventually it'll actually start separating and going toward the pins on the chip. Unfortunately, I had too much solder paste, and it wasn't evenly distributed, so you can see that it pulled the chip off by one pin all the way around. Well, that's not too bad. I can reach in here with a pair of tweezers while it's still warm and put it in place. Oops.
Oh. Sometimes that stuff is a little hard to do, but that kit really went well. And that was the Soft Rock 40. I don't think that one's available anymore, but they've had several out since then. It's a cheap little SDR project, and I still use one here, not a 40, but one of the frequency agile modules that will do multiple frequencies, and it's great. Doesn't cost much money, and it's really not that hard to do. Someone said they would have done it years ago when their eyesight was better. You just need thicker glasses. That's my trick with it.
I noticed the glasses.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great. That was great. And that solder paste is very, very important. You might want to tell some of the audience that what solder paste is all about. Some of them might not know why we use solder paste. Run by a little bit of explanation about that, George.
Well, there's actually two different products that are called solder paste. One is solder flux, and a lot of times it's called paste. Here's a little box of Kester here, and this is just a little rosin core type of flux like would be in the center of your solder, and you'll usually add that to a connector or something that's going to be difficult to solder, and that helps speed up the melting process and bonding process of the solder. But the solder paste I used there was actually solder paste. It's a pliable solder that's in the little syringe there, and you just squirt it on there, you know, where you want it, and you can stick your components into it, and it'll kind of hold them in place, and then it melts at a lower temperature, so that's how the hot air works with it. And some people do it in a convection oven. I've never tried that, but I want to try some more surface mount soldering one day.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. What a great thing. I appreciate you doing that piece. We all learned. I know I certainly did. Well, let's see what you got for a contest this week, what we had last time, and see what's going on there, George.
Well, last time, we talked about HF radios and receivers, and I had the question of what does RIT, a RIT control, do, or what is it? And we had a winning answer from Stephen W3SFG, and Stephen said that it's receiver incremental tuning. And essentially what it is, it allows you to adjust your receive frequency slightly without changing your transmit frequency so that you can track somebody who's a little off frequency. So thanks, Stephen. Appreciate you entering the contest and everyone who gave us an answer. Just about everybody got that one right. He wins a copy of Construction HF Wire Antennas from Jerry Buston, KR7KZ, a great little book on building your own antennas with wire for HF radios. And next week, I believe we're going to give away another one of these Morse code Breaking the Barrier books that features the Kosh method. This is by Dave Finley, N1IRZ. It's courtesy of MFJ Enterprises, a great book for those who want to speed up their Morse code a little bit. And our question for that will be, who invented Morse code? And I just don't want his last name. I want his whole name. So send your answers to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner.
Wow. Who invented Morse code? Well, I've got to think about that one, huh, Bob? I don't know. We'll have to. Maybe the chat room has already got it. Hey, Bob and George, just a quickie. HamRadioReview.net and OnlineElmer.com from Dustin Williams. He says, Ham Nation viewers and listeners, beam him up because he wants some input as to how this new service to help folks get their license is coming along. And good news, next week, Kent Britton will be at Plano, WA5VJB. You all know Kent. He writes for CQVHF. He's now going to be working as a consultant to Aero antennas. And you know, many of you for field day will use the Aero antenna. And he's got some new improvements to the Aero antenna that many of us use for satellite work. A reader, WA6RKN, says, if you got a Wushan radio, I know he didn't say that right, Kenwood accessories work great with it. You don't have to buy the other one. So if you got a Kenwood and a Wushan, many of the accessories are the same. And finally, Rocky, KE5IHD, says that he loves the solder guy. He loves George. And he says that DX Engineering has some great tools for helping strip back all sorts of coax that Bob was showing. So, Bob, there you go. The readers are out there building things.
They are. We appreciate hearing from everybody, and we want you to know that we would like to have more pictures of your stations, but better than that, we'd like to have some video, little short videos, four or five minutes. You know, you get something short like that. We want to put these together. Now, get your video camera out. We know we're not NBC. My gosh, look at us. we just have fun here. That's what Ham Nation's all about. So get your video camera out, and let's see what you have. Antennas, a station, any kind of special contact you made or stuff like that would be great to have. Well, let's see what's going on in Northern Illinois and what's been happening in the chat room. Cheryl, are you all with us tonight? How are you doing? It's nice to see you tonight.
Hi, I'm doing really fine tonight, Bob, and greetings and welcome to everyone in the chat room. I want to say hello to Gordo and hello to George and hello to Amanda. I'm so glad you guys are back here. I do have quite a lot of activity tonight in the chat room, so it's going to be hard for me to pick and choose here, but I'll tell you what, I can direct some of these things tonight. There's so many. George, AC2BA Dave wanted to know, solder connector or crimp connector, what is better in your opinion?
A solder connector, if you can do it. If it's too difficult, use a crimp connector, particularly on a type N connector or a B and C. Those seem to go a little better with crimp on, but I use solder for everything else.
Also have another one for you, George. A person that did not sign in with their call sign, perhaps one day they will do that, but they asked, how would it work for a PL259 connector about what you just presented? They wanted to know about a PL259 connector with that same thing.
I don't think it would get hot enough to solder a PL259 because you've got to heat up the metal, and I don't think the hot air would get that hot enough. The solder would melt at a lower temperature, but it'd probably cost you a lot more money because that paste is kind of expensive. So my best recommendation for PL259, get you a really hot iron or a gun to use with that. And use a flux.
And another question was about field day, and I thought it was interesting because the chat room was answering the chat room tonight, and that's different. So they said, what special rules are there for field day? That was from N20HH Vin, and WA8YCD Bob replied, full power by band is allowed, but there are bonuses for 150 watts or less. And more bonuses for QRP, and I know there's a whole big rule set which we really couldn't cover here. Is there some place you could direct the viewers where to go for some of the rules for points for field day?
Gordo will take that. And Probably ARRL, that is the main sponsor behind many of these great operating events, ARRL.org, and look up Field Day. They've got all the rules, but the most important is to get out there and play radio. Not necessarily make it a contest, but get out there and make your radio thing happen. So that's what I think. What do you think, Bob, the most important part for Field Day?
Get on the air. I hasten to that to some of the old timers, but boy, if you've just gotten into the hobby or you've only been in it a year or so and you work a lot of VHF with the repeaters and stuff, go to a Field Day site and pick out one of the 20 meters or 40 meters or 75. Get on the low frequencies and you're going to experience a totally new facet of amateur radio. I get such a thrill out of going to Field Day. There's just something about it. I can't explain it. It's like a little kid. I still have that same thrill. Here I am, almost 55 years as a ham later, that I did in my first Field Day when I carried my Harvey Wells out to a field. Oh. We ran a 6-meter stage. That Harvey Wells you see behind me all the time, and soon to be here in Springfield, but I carried that thing and then had a Parks converter, and then we had a Hallicrafters SX99, and had a big old generator to give us 110 volts to run all that stuff. I mean, that's what you did. So, George, what is your idea of the great Field Day experience?
For me, I like setting it up, you know, pulling everything together, getting it up in the air for your antennas and setting up the ground stations and getting everything to work. For me, that's more fun than actually operating. Of course, you know, it takes a lot of different types of hams to make the whole thing work, and that's where the clubs and organizations come together. Last year, Tommy and Jimmy and I went out and did our own Field Day, and we waited to the last minute to plan it, but we managed to pull it off. We've got a couple of weeks yet, so we really haven't started planning this year. We like to wait to the last minute. But, you know, if you are not going to set up something yourself, find a club in your area and visit their Field Day.
That's right. Yeah. And hey, Gordo, can you imagine those three guys going out and doing Field Day? Can you imagine? I would love to. On that,
that would be pretty scary out there on the airways. But, yep, I can imagine. Now, Bob, you've got a very special Field Day location that you're maybe planning on going to. Do you want to reveal that?
Well, I am hoping. I haven't even told them about this yet. But Joplin's about an hour up I-44 from us, and I'm hoping to go to Joplin. I want to do some things around here too, but I really want to go to Joplin because, as you well know, they've had a real tough year, but they've come through it remarkably well, and amateur radio's been at the center of that comeback, and so I want to go visit their club and get on the air in Joplin, and I'll take my video camera and do some stuff for you, Gordo.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
There's another question. Next. I have you for Gordo, if you have just one more minute here. Is there open time still?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
For it, Cheryl.
Okay, Gordo, here's a question for you. AG6HE Dennis says, could you please give me some questions to stump the experts? So that's my new thing I'm going to be presenting in the chat room, is asking for a stump the expert type question. So, Gordo, what's the best method to learn CW? Farnsworth,
okay.
Kosh, K-O-C-H, or?
Okay, that's a good one. And we recommend listening to CW, memorizing it by sound, not by necessarily studying a page of dots and dashes. And each student has their own way of learning it. A few years ago, there was Rhythm of the Code. Many learned it that way. The Kosh, many learned it that way. So whatever way that keeps you excited about learning CW, or if you like my voice, you can hear it on 8 CW CDs. But any way of playing the code, and most important, Cheryl, a little practice keyer. You don't have to get a real expensive one like this, just a plain old straight key, and pound away the newspaper in the morning. And that's another great way to help learn CW, as you're actually doing a little bit of sending to yourself. Back to you, Cheryl.
Very good. Nice answer on that. I agree. And a little bit of practice on little bursts of time rather than just one or two hours in a row is better. That's what I understand it to be. Now, one other thing is I had a question from Amanda in the chat room. Thank you for your question, Amanda. She asked me, how was 75 meters doing? And I said, 75 meters recently has been rocking. I think the band has just been great, and it's a great band to have, but you'd have to upgrade to general class license to get on the HF band. So if you're only a technician, I encourage you to go further because HF is so much fun. I can't even begin to explain it in words. And last but not least, I think this is going to go to Bob, KF7TKS. He says, does Art Bell still have an AM radio show?
No, he has this show. I think he actually owns that, the name of the show. But I think he's on the weekends. But every once in a while, he'll pop on 75 meters at about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And he's still doing well and having fun in his retirement.
Oh, thank you for that. And last but not least, Bob or Gordo or George, it comes from KA0SPM Steve, asks, who invented the dipole antenna? To ask the expert.
Wow.
I don't know.
Man, wow.
That's as difficult. Well, maybe we'll save that for next week.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's got me. George, what do you think? George?
Some guy with a long spool of wire. That's my best guess.
For $50. Anyway, we'll try and get that answered next week. We'll do a little research there. But thank you very much for all your questions, chat room. I appreciate it. And I will pose Stump the Expert questions. I'll be asking you next week, same time, same place, on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. Adjust the time for your time area. And thanks for watching.
Well, that was great. Maybe it was the guy that was flying the kite with a key. What was his name, Bob? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I got to check on that. I can tell you who did the G5RV, and I can tell you who did the MIT coaxial dipole that I use religiously. But I don't know who did the simple dipole, but oh well. Wow. That's good for us to check on next week. But I will not be here next week, gang. I may be here for a couple of minutes. I'm getting called to Cleveland. I have to go back to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They're asking me to come back, and we're going to do a little video. But I'm hoping to be able to check in at the beginning of the net, which is just a few minutes. I'm going to try to sneak around the corner from our display at the Rock Hall and go into Les Paul's room and maybe bring you a little of that. And
all right.
Mama Cass's dress is hanging on one of the huge walls beside our display. And then the four suits that the Beatles wore on Sgt. Pepper's album is around the corner. Wow. If I can get all that done, why, they're all right there on the Heil Sound floor. And we're just so honored and humbled and gracious to have that bestowed on us. My gosh, it was ham radio that gave me the knowledge to do all of that back in the 60s and 70s that really set the platform for what we hear in concert today. But we're going back. They want to do some video next week, so we're going to do that. And I really hope we get to check in with you. So I'll be calling in Gordo, and Don's going to sit in for me, and we'll see what happens. So if you hear a little weak signal trying to check in, well, it's probably me.
Roger that.
Okay. Well, I appreciate everybody watching Ham Nation tonight. And check into the nets now. Let's see where they are going to be. George, you got any numbers for the Dewdrops and all of those guys? You got any frequencies?
Yeah, I believe the 40-meter net is going to be on 7.268 megahertz again. Echo Link is on star Dewdrop N star or node number 355-800. And D-Star net is on reflector 14 module C. If you don't have a D-Star radio, you can listen at wx4adx.com/listen.
All right. Well, we appreciate Everybody being there in 3850, you'll hear the big signal from BIK. Let me tell you, she's got a big one now. I'll tell you, her signal is really great on 75, so you can hear us. I won't be there because all my stuff is thrown all over the kitchen floor. Well, not thrown, but you know what I mean. 7-3, everybody. Gordo, 7-3 to you. You'll be here next week ready to go with
we'll
your
We'll be ready to go, and I'm on 7268 right now.
This is WT68. Stand by for the ham station.
There he is. Okay. Thanks very much to John and to Chad for making all of this happen in Petaluma for us. And thanks to everybody for watching. Pass the word. We're so happy with Ham Nation being able to bring you all these fun things and the excitement of amateur radio. Bye-bye for now. This is K9EID.